The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning. I've passed out copies of a sutta that's called the Mangala Sutta, which means the Discourse on Good Fortune. And since it's a time when we reflect, perhaps, on what we're grateful for, I thought this might be an appropriate offering. And you're welcome to take it with you today and consider some of the points on there and how they play out in your life. So the setting of this sutta is that Deva comes to a grove and where the Buddha is meditating and approaches and asks a question. And this Deva says, "Many devas and human beings give thought to good fortune, desiring well-being. Tell then the highest good fortune." So this is a question to the Buddha. And I'll just read his answer. It's a number of stanzas. "Not consorting with fools, consorting with the wise, paying homage to those who deserve homage, this is the highest good fortune. Living in a civilized country, having made merit in the past, directing oneself rightly, this is the highest good fortune. Broad knowledge, skill, discipline well mastered, words well spoken, this is the highest good fortune. Support for one's parents, assistance to one's wife and children, jobs that are not left unfinished, this is the highest good fortune. Generosity, living by the Dhamma, assistance to one's relatives, deeds that are blameless, this is the highest good fortune. Avoiding, abstaining from evil, refraining from intoxicants, being uncomplacent with regard to qualities of the mind, this is the highest good fortune. Respect, humility, contentment, gratitude, hearing the Dhamma on timely occasions, this is the highest good fortune. Patience, composure, seeing contemplatives, discussing the Dhamma on timely occasions, this is the highest good fortune. Austerity, celibacy, seeing the noble truths, realizing liberation, this is the highest good fortune. A mind that, when touched by the ways of the world, is unshaken, sorrowless, dustless, secure, this is the highest good fortune. Everywhere undefeated when doing these things, people go everywhere in well-being. This is their highest good fortune." So this is quite a rich sutta that can, you know, could be talked about for a while. But in the short time that we have today, I'd like to just go through it and understand it as an unfolding of the Eightfold Path. So, you know, there are a number, again, even there are a number of ways to see it, but let's just start. At the beginning, the Buddha talks about very basic choices about who we associate with. So not consorting with fools, consorting with the wise, paying homage to those who deserve homage, so, you know, seeing spiritual leaders. This goes along with his statement that often spiritual friends are the foundation of the path. So we need to be associating with others who are pointing themselves in the same direction in order to have a base for our own self-development. And then he goes on to say, you know, the next stanza, living in a civilized country, having made merit in the past. Okay, this is somewhat historical, understanding that this comes from a culture that believes in rebirth, and so there's a sense that one's position has been determined by one's past actions. Directing oneself rightly. So that that line is quite potent. It has to do with intention. So initially we have the right view, that it's a good idea to be with people like us, and then we have the right intention, the second step of the path, directing oneself rightly. This is really good fortune, is to even have the sense that we want to move in a good direction. And then there come a number of stanzas that talk about action in the world. So these relate to the ethical components of the path, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, right? Those are the next steps. And this talks about, not necessarily in that order, but that there are specific references to what that might mean. So he talks about broad knowledge, skill, and discipline well mastered. So this is having a place in the community as someone who contributes, words well spoken. That would be right speech. And then a sense of one's place in family and community, some responsibility, so support for one's parents, support for one's family, jobs that are well done, generosity, living by the Dhamma, so beginning to have a sense of an ethical framework to one's life. It's not just that we do the best we can and that's good enough, or we try to get everything that we can out of this life and the heck with everybody else. It's a sense of, I live in a community, I have ethical standards, I understand myself to be part of a larger picture. And then in the next stanza, there's a bit of a transition happening. So it says, avoiding abstaining from evil, refraining from intoxicants. Notice the next line, being uncomplacent with regard to qualities of the mind. So that refers to what's called heedfulness, or could be the beginning, you know, developing mindfulness. And we begin to see the first reference to the mind. So previously it was about action in the world, about thinking about one's own intentions. And then now it's about developing qualities of mind. So making a change from focusing solely on the physical to focusing also on the spiritual. And the next stanza deepens that. Respect, humility, contentment, and gratitude. These are all internal qualities. Hearing the Dhamma on timely occasions, that's also an important shift. So beginning to hear the Dhamma, that's a reference to hearing the noble truths and beginning to have an understanding that is not only the view of karma or kama, of one's actions being good, but also hearing the teachings on the ending of suffering, which can take one beyond kama. And then from there, it moves more deeply into the development of the mind. So we're now coming into the samadhi steps of the path, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So patience, composure, seeing contemplatives, that's hearing the teachings again, discussing the Dhamma on timely occasions, so beginning to make the path one's own to the point where one can talk about it. I think it's interesting that patience makes it so high up onto the list. It's a reminder of how important it is to just keep doing the practice and let it unfold. And then we reach this stanza, austerity, it says celibacy, we could also say purity of, you know, purity of one's life, seeing the noble truths and realizing liberation. So for us as lay people, this might be attending a meditation retreat. During that time, we certainly practice austerity of silence and a simple life, and the freedom that comes from that. Purity of living by the precepts for those that time on retreat. And then this, of course, refers to meditation, of understanding in one's mind how suffering is created and how it can be let go. You notice that this is now completely removed from, you know, the happenings of one's physical life. This is much more, this is now about the spiritual and mental development. And the next stanza is only about the mind. It doesn't even talk about a person. It says a mind that, when touched by the ways of the world, is unshaken, sorrowless, dustless, secure. This is a description of the mind of the Arahant. So, but what's perhaps really interesting is that it doesn't end there. It doesn't just say that's it. We get to Arahantship and we've written off the world completely. The next paragraph says, everywhere undefeated when doing these things, people go everywhere in well-being. This is their highest good fortune. This is about people again. It's not just about the loftiness of the mind achieving final nibbana. After that, there's going around in the world in perfect well-being. And it kind of brings it back. This is my interpretation, of course, but to me, this brings it back to a dimension of reality. Again, the retreat ends, or we come down from the mountain, and there's, again, living. And there's living in well-being, living in peace, living in harmony, again, living in our communities, and being the example of what that freedom can look like in the world. And this isn't necessarily linear either. I think it's possible to appreciate every paragraph in this sutta at different times of the day and different times of one's life. It's not that it's, you know, oh, I've made it to paragraph 7. You know, it's more that we understand that there are these many different kinds of good fortune that happen to humans, and these are all available to us. And as we walk the path, they will all unfold in their own way and in their own time. And that it's valuable to appreciate the fullness and the wholeness of the path, however it's unfolding at a given time. So I hope in this time of gratitude, did you notice that gratitude appears on the list, by the way? It's about a little more than halfway through. So I hope in this time of gratitude you might consider that the Eightfold Path is one of the greatest blessings in your life, and how that's unfolding for you at this time. Thank you very much.